So here, proceditum brahma maha bhuti. May you be pleased with us, the demigods. And who are you? You are Brahma. Not Brahma, which means Lord Brahma, but Brahma. You are Brahma. You are the greatest. You are the greatest. All different types of living entities. All of them. Not just some of them, some family, but all the living entities. They come from you. Whatever family they're in, whatever species and the concomitant mode of reproduction that they go through in the process of their taking birth. But you are the original source of their birth. And Maha Vibhuti, you have unlimited potency. The whole creation rests on you. It's all dependent on you, but it rests on your feet. In other words, right at the bottom of you. It is not resting on your head as if it is something greater than you, perhaps, or something of that sort. But it is just, it's residing on your feet. It's in this lowly position in relation to you. So, proceditum Brahma. We are praying to you, and you please be merciful to us, because you're the greatest. And if anyone can be merciful, it's you. And your mercy, it is the greatest mercy, just as you're the greatest in other respects, in all respects, you're the greatest. So your mercy is the greatest, and you please exhibit that mercy with us. This is very nice. Oftentimes I wonder when I read these prayers, how do these devotees think of these nice examples, all these nice points, particularly in situations like this or with Uttara, as we mentioned in the first canto, where they're under great pressure and there's danger. Who knows what's going to happen? They could lose their lives just in a moment or in a very short time. But how is it that they think of all these nice examples and nice characteristics of the Lord and how he does this and does that and is like this and like that and present it all very poetically and very beautifully, actually, where when there's death just bearing down on them? By material standards, it seems inevitable. But still, so nicely, they're presenting themselves and appealing to the Lord with great feeling and very appropriately. Well, that is because they are great devotees. And they're not just ordinary material people like here. Lord Brahma mentions these four types of living entities. Who appear within the material world. There are only four types, actually. Those Jirayuja, born from embryos, born from wombs, in other ways, that's us. Then Andaja, born from eggs, like chickens and so on. Svedaja, born from perspiration. What does that mean? That you perspire and somehow your bodily excrements just turn into living entities. Oh, if your perspiration does that, then what about you? You must be very special. But no, it's just a medium. It's just a medium. Yes, it's a sort of indirect medium, actually. that the living entities somehow are placed into that perspiration. And it is not that they actually are born from the perspiration as such, or would be Jhana. Those who appear from seeds, like the plants and so on. Yes, so this is all the living entities then. They're all appearing in one of these four manners. All of these living entities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so great that he is responsible for all of things. He's the greatest. They're all appearing from him. We cannot produce living entities from our perspiration. We cannot produce eggs or, what is it? Seeds. Only in one way, through the embryo, that particular system, can we produce offspring. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great, he can produce all four types of living entities. And not only can he produce a few of each type, but he produces all of them. So how great is he? He's very great. He is the greatest, actually. There's a nice description in Nectar of Devotion, how in Dwarka, when Lord Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, the demigods would come. Krishna was there. So naturally, the demigods, they would come every day. This was the thing. You wake up in the morning, you go and see Krishna. That's all. That was the program. Every day, they would roll up at some point in the morning, and they would be there. We want to see Krishna. So, there's a very nice description given in Nectar of Persian of how Krishna's doorman, like his secretary, dealing with visitors, making up his appointment book and, you know, managing all the visitors, so that Krishna didn't just get bothered by anybody and everybody, or at times that were not suitable. So there's a very nice description how the demigods are there in the waiting room. They're waiting to see Krishna. And there's so many of them. And they all want to see Krishna. They're so enthusiastic, of course. They want to see Krishna now. But the dwar keeper, that secretary, being a very good secretary and appointment maker and manager of visitors, he, of course, didn't want Krishna to just be flooded by all these enthusiastic demigods. So he was managing them. And he was telling them, he said, Lord Brahma, stop offering prayers from your four mouths. And Lord Shiva, just stop walking up and down, chanting. And Lord Indra, you stop crying from your thousand eyes. You stop it. Lord Krishna is very busy today. I don't know if he'll be able to see you. So you just calm down and relax. Yes, so Krishna is so great that even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the greatest demigods, Lord Indra, the king of the administrative demigods, these greatest personalities in the world, in the universe, who are far beyond all of us put together. But even then, they can't just come in and say, here I am, I'm Lord Brahma, and I am seeing the door will fly open for them.
No. No.
Even there's the description of Mahavishnu at the end of the 10th canto. Lord Mahavishnu, he's even greater than Brahma and Shiva. He's the greatest of the managers of the universe, of the whole material creation for that matter. So, Mahavishnu, he wanted to see Krishna. So I don't know what happened when he went and met that secretary, you know, that one who was telling everyone to keep cool and, you know, they couldn't expect just to see Krishna today. Maybe he got turned away or something, or whatever. But Mahavishnu, there at the end of the 10th canto, it's described how he wanted to see Krishna. And he was coming to Dwarka regularly. But somehow, it doesn't describe exactly how, he was not able to see Krishna. But he really wanted to see Krishna. So what he did, he applied a very remarkable strategy to somehow or other make some arrangement so he could see Krishna. So he did a very extraordinary thing, actually. He kidnapped one devotee Brahmin family's child. Just when the child was born, just came out of the womb, minutes later or something like that, he was gone. He was just not there. Kidnapped, just like that. So we can imagine how the parents felt. Suddenly the child vanishes into thin air. So then they decided to have a second child. The same thing happened. Mahavishnu again. Third child, fourth, fifth. A whole sequence of several children. Every one of them vanished into thin air, or Mahavishnu's somehow, because he's very clever and powerful. He somehow just stole them. Somehow, they vanished. So they were devotees and Brahmins living in Dwarka. So naturally, they turned to Krishna. And naturally, it's a bit of a long story, we won't go into all the details. Naturally, Krishna responded and went to recover their children. And he did. And when he was there with Mahavishnu, then he asked Mahavishnu, do you have these children? Mahavishnu just said, yes. Krishna asked, can I have them back? Mahavishnu just said, yes, no problem. Just take them, and there they were. And he said, you know, the reason I did this was because I wanted to see you with Arjuna. Arjuna came also. And I knew if I did it in this way, then it would eventually come to this point. As we said, it was a bit of a long story. I knew it would come to this point that in order to protect your devotees and help the Brahmins, that you would come yourself, and then I would see you. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments there, and Srila Prabhupada refers to this at some length in the Krishna books, how Mahavishnu was forced to do this, to see Krishna. He couldn't just walk in and say, I'm Mahavishnu, to that secretary. You just step back, and I'm just going to go in and see Krishna. No. It was not easy. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, Krishna is so great, he's so much greater, that even Mahavishnu, in order to get to see Krishna, had to go through some major rigmarole before he finally got to see Krishna. So Krishna's the greatest. He's the greatest person. And, of course, there are many other stories. Lord Brahma, how Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and cows. How Lord Brahma came that one time wanting to see Krishna, and he met perhaps that same secretary at the door and said, "I've come to see Krishna." The secretary said, "Well, who can I tell Krishna has come?" And Lord Brahma said, "Well, tell him that Brahma has come." The secretary went in and came back shortly and said, "Krishna would like to know which Lord Brahma." And Lord Brahma was a little taken aback. Somehow he didn't know there are other Brahmas in other universes. So he responded in that little perplexed way, that what do you mean, which Lord Brahma? I am the Lord Brahma, of course. You know, the four-headed Lord Brahma. So the secretary went back and told Krishna that it's the four-headed Lord Brahma. And Krishna then saw him. And Lord Brahma asked, "Well, what do you mean? I don't understand. You asked, which Lord Brahma? You mean there are other Lord Brahmas?" And then Krishna called for so many Lord Brahmas. And then our four-headed Lord Brahma, he saw that there were many others. Some, what to speak of four heads, some had 10, 100 even. Some even had 1,000 heads. Just like, you know, a whole pile of heads. And some had 1,000,000 heads. Some had 1,000,000,000 heads. Some had 1,000,000,000,000 heads. And some had tens of trillions of heads. That must be quite something to see, what to speak of have. So our four-headed Lord Brahma, he was totally astonished, just to the point of being completely flabbergasted. Because the number of heads indicates brain power and capability and like that. And the number of heads that the Brahma has is determined by the size of universe he's going to manage. The bigger the universe, the more brain power, and therefore the more heads. So our universe then, with the four-headed Lord Brahma in charge, actually it's the smallest. Yeah. Our big universe, we think it's, you know, some people think it's just so vast. Some people think it's unlimited. It's, at least by our standards, it's very, very big. But by Krishna's standards, it's the smallest of all of them. So who is this Krishna? Who is this Krishna? He is really just in another dimension of size, of everything, altogether beyond us. So Lord Brahma then, as a devotee, and as a very big person in his own right, particularly by our standards, very, very big person, he's praying to Krishna. He's in the process of appealing to Krishna. But when he does so, he's doing it in this very nice way, very wonderful way, not just coming and shouting out, "Give me this, give me that," not like that at all. It is like a devotional principle, actually. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna makes that point. Chatur vidava jante mam janasukriti rajana arta jigyasa artarati gyanicha bharatashava. That in the very beginning stages, at least, four types of people may approach me and take some sort of shelter of me, at least in an initial sense. And the first is the distressed. It is not uncommon that distressed people, at least if they are a little pious, then they will take shelter of the Lord to deal with their distress. They'll pray to God. At least if they're a little pious. If they're not so pious, they'll turn to something else. Turn to some intoxication, just lose control and go mad or something. But if they're a little pious, they may approach Krishna. Of course, Lord Brahma, it is not that he's just a little pious and somehow he's turning to Krishna. He's a very great devotee and he's turning to Krishna. So, the devotees, they know, if I'm going to pray to someone, if I need help from someone, let it be Krishna. It will be Krishna. I will pray to Krishna. So therefore we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, in so many places, great devotees are appealing to Krishna. So we should also pray to Krishna when we're in some situation where we need that sort of help, higher help, and it is beyond us. We should also pray to Krishna. Of course, we should be a little careful what we pray to Krishna for. We don't want to just be praying to Krishna. We're meant to be devotees. We're meant to be serving him. We're meant to be trying to get free from the material nature. So we don't want to get into some habit of praying to Krishna for anything and everything, just some material things. No. But when there's some very important situation connected with our devotional service, then we should pray to Krishna. But if it's just, you know, oh, look, she has a nice new sari, so I'll pray to Krishna, you please give me a nicer sari, or something, whatever. Let me get a nicer motor car to impress my proposed devotee, fiancé, so she'll think I'm cool. Not like that. But here, it's an important situation. The demigods are under attack. They're under attack from the demons. The whole arrangement of the Lord for managing the universe, it may be turned upside down. Yes, so it's actually some situation where there are real Krishna conscious concerns involved. So, when it goes beyond you, and there is some important considerations to do with Krishna consciousness involved, then of course we must appeal to Krishna to help like that. This is one of the 9 processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnas, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam. 9 processes of devotional service. And one of them is Vandanam, offering prayers. Of course, that offering prayers does not always mean that we need some help in this way or that. One can offer prayers simply to glorify. That's very nice. That is better, really. But sometimes one may, as a devotee, in terms of Krishna consciousness and situations in Krishna consciousness, one may appeal to the Lord for help, for mercy. Proceed to him. You please be merciful to us. But when we do that, we should try to learn from these great persons like Lord Brahma here and Uttara in the first canto and so on. There are a number of instances. We should try to learn how to do these things nicely. not just in some emotional sort of disturbed state, just calling out for help. Even if that happens, we should still take shelter of Krishna, but we should try to do it nicely, following in the footsteps of these great devotees. Any comments or questions? Oh, there's a microphone, just a second. You said when you think on a rational level, a realistic level, then such and such, like that. I would say that's not entirely, real, or, not entirely as sort of pragmatic a view as you might, or many people might think it is. It is a fact the world is deteriorating in certain ways, but there's also improvement in certain ways. In other words, we would say that the change is occurring, but it's not just across the board that everything just changes, but, it's step by step. So, just as an example, so many people have become, and are continuing to become more and more, become vegetarian, become interested in spiritual life in different forms, directly and indirectly. There's been the collapse, for example, of communism, at least to quite a large extent. So changes have taken place for the better. So we would say that this is all part of that, what you're referring to, the improvement, either directly or it may well be indirectly, but through the influence of Krishna consciousness, the spreading of Krishna consciousness. I remember being, when I was a child, and my mother, some new people moved in a few doors away, and my mother came and told me that they're vegetarians, these new people. And she told me that, the way she told me was, these weird people have moved in, these vegetarians, watch out, who knows, It was like that in a pretty much very Western country. But now, in America, at least 10 or 11, 12% of the whole population is vegetarian. In Europe, it's increasing steadily and rapidly, actually. Yeah. Of course, in other respects, things are deteriorating. But what can you expect? It's Kali Yuga. Rome was not built in a day, that sort of idea. It takes time, it's not easy. But if we keep working at it, just look here in Durban. If you go back 30 years, how many devotees were there? I mean, real devotees, not just, with all due respect, Hindu people who may like Krishna to some degree or in some way, but actual devotees who have actually already changed their lives and are continuing to progress. So how many were there? Compared to today, the change in terms of percentage is from, maybe zero or maybe a handful, say, to thousands and thousands. So the percentage change has probably been, you know, many hundreds of percent improvement, or even perhaps thousands of percent improvement. So it's like that. As we said, not across the board.